you got into singing because there was a piano in your house.
Well, I got into music because there was a piano in the house. I think also I have to give credit to my mother, because she was always playing the piano after her three rambunctious children went to bed. And I would go to sleep listening to her play Handel's Water Music or whatever she happened to have on the piano, just to try and bring herself into another realm, you know. And I would fall asleep to that every night, you know. And the other important element was that when I was in elementary school, we had a very inspiring music teacher named Hope McEwen, and she brought out that excitement and curiosity in me that's still there, that still lives pretty well every day, you know, in my life, in this crazy music world.
And I was looking at your selected repertoire on your website, and it was so varied. Mm-hmm. You know, Bach and Vivaldi, mm-hmm. and Handel, Debussy, mm-hmm. Mahler,
yep.
contemporary works.
Yep.
Varied in genre as well, opera, mm-hmm. folk songs.
Yeah, you know, I'm actually extremely particular. I'm very picky about what I sing. So you look at this very, you know, varied list of the repertoire that I do sing, but, you know, there are Mahler pieces that I don't sing. And there are, you know, there is a lot of bel canto repertoire that I don't sing. It just doesn't speak to me. I don't feel that I have something fantastic to give to it, to serve it. So even within a certain composer's repertoire list of what he or she wrote, there are pieces that I will do or that I will not do just because I have an affinity, you know, yes or no. And for me, it's very clear in my head. It's a kind of architecture of the score that pulls me in to a particular score. And then there's also the character. And normally for me, the character has to have some element of torment and some element of catharsis. And it can even be existing within a comic role, but that catharsis, the change that a character goes through, is very necessary for me in a role. If the character doesn't go through something that changes their life, then I just don't feel close enough to it.
Do your interests, are they evolving or are they just expanding?
Well, you know, I was saying up until very recently that they were expanding because, you know, I moved into conducting as well and I've been dancing, and I thought of it as an expansion. But then recently I was in a conversation with a friend and I realized actually it's not an expansion, it's actually an inward looking. It's as if I'm able to go more in. I can go deeper into the music. I can go deeper into my own possibilities and my own deep feelings and emotions about art, about performance, about perspective, about what is expression. And it becomes something very, very personal. And I think the expansion part is actually more of just opening the doors of who I am for the public so that they can also come in. It's not that I'm going out. It's that I have found my own way of letting them come in.
And you say your approach is rooted in character.
Yes, I really do feel in every piece that I'm looking for the story. I'm looking for, what did this person go through? For example, this week I'm singing Wozzeck Fragments. I'm singing the character of Marie. So I'm not just interested in what's happening to Marie in the opera. I'm not even interested only in what's happening to her in these two arias which are in the piece. But I'm thinking about what brought this woman into a relationship with Wozzeck. Why is she with a crazy man? Why has she had a child out of wedlock? How has her life played itself out to bring her to the point that she is an unfaithful wife? And sometimes in the piece, she is on the edge of abusive to her child. Certainly, she's very self-sabotaging. So I'm constantly, you know, even during rehearsals today, I'm thinking, what happened? What happened? And I'm inventing her story, you know, even by just the people I see on the street, you know.
Sometimes when I talk to people about orchestral pieces, musicians, I ask if the circumstances of the composition are important or it's just the music. I mean, and it's even more complicated.
Right. Well, I mean, absolutely the circumstances. I mean, I do like, maybe I'm a nosy person, but I do like to know that Ligeti suffered very much from the communist takeover of Hungary, that his family, you know, his brother and his father died in the war in a violent way, that he was forced to be in the German army, that I knew him personally, I knew how angry he was about violence and about regimes. And here I am singing a piece where he is making the ultimate fun of a KGB secret police character. But there's a lot of anger, and that's what I think drove the energy of his scores. It's phenomenal. Also his Requiem, that anger at death is incredible. And the way he was able to harness that, his personal story, who he was, he could harness it and express himself in an absolutely extraordinary way.
Well, why don't we talk about the Berg?
The Berg, yes. So the Berg, we have the character of Marie. I mean, this piece, the Wozzeck Fragments, it was kind of Berg's, like, you know, propaganda for the opera. He wrote it before the opera. He wanted people to hear some of the music. He wanted to use it to help sell his idea of the opera and get people to produce the entire piece. These are two scenes with Marie where she at one point is singing a lullaby to her son, but it's kind of a lullaby about herself, a woman who has a child, and the child has no official father. And she's being quite edgy and quite, she's kind of saying the things about herself that I think other people say about her, and she knows it. And the second aria, she has run off and had an affair with slept one night or something with the drum major, and she feels terribly guilty about it, and she's searching the Bible to find some passages that might give her some respite from her guilt and shame. And then she looks at her son, and she feels even more regret for the life that she's led up to this point. And she's just in a state of panic, verging on hysteria. It's really quite heartbreaking. And then in the final scene, Marie has been killed by Wozzeck. And we have the children singing, and I sing the children's part, and they're singing Ring Around a Rosie. And then they see the little boy, and they stop singing. And he has just been told that his mother is dead, and he's gone into a kind of repetitive, almost autistic, kind of severe dance step. That's it. And he's just saying hop, 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 over and over. You know, it's horrible.
Let's talk about Mysteries of the Macabre. Mm-hmm. It's based on an opera.
Yes. There's a character in the Grand Macabre by Ligeti, who is the KGB chief of police. And what Ligeti did was he took the entire role, which is three arias which are separated by some other music, and he just put them all together into one piece. It's 7.5 minutes. And it's this crazy chief of police who is trying to tell the prince, who I suppose in this case is Simon Rattle, that there's a comet that is coming to blow up the Earth. But this little KGB person is so crazy from having spied and having been such a horrible manipulative person for his whole life or her whole life, that he can't speak in anything except code. Nobody can understand what the hell he's talking about. It's disastrous. And in the score, you know, Ligeti writes, hysterical, even more hysterical, on the verge of complete panic, completely beside himself. You know, he just writes it further and further and further until we're all, and it's at such a pace. I mean, he's written out hyperventilation, you know, it's part of my part. I mean, it's incredibly demanding. It was terribly difficult to learn, but you know, it's been, what is it, 2013 now? So it's been 12, 13 years since I've started singing this piece. So I've done it many, many, many times.
When did you first do it?
2001. And Ligeti was there when I sang it the first time. And he was there a few other times when I sang it, and he was happy.
Did he have any comments?
Well, actually, I don't mean to brag, but the first rehearsal he was at when I sang it, he just walked towards the stage after I finished, and he had his arms outstretched, and he slowly walked up to me, and he just said, "You learned my piece. Thank you." That was just, for me, you know, I still get choked up when I think about it, and other composers with whom I have that deep trust and relationship, because I trusted his score and I learned everything that he asked for. And then he trusted me to take the piece. And the most important person in the room for me, whether they're there or not physically, is the composer. And it will always be like that. Always, always. Not the conductor, not the location, not the orchestra. Always, always the composer.
Simon Rattle said to me that this was one of the funniest pieces of orchestral music that exists.
It is. There aren't that many funny pieces out there. There's some good Haydn. There's Rameau has some funny stuff. But it's not a whole lot of really funny music. And Ligeti, his sense of timing is so great. And his sense of, he's got this really dark sense of humor. And it's just, you can do stuff that you could never do in real life. You know, you can make fun and you can misbehave. And we could never do that in real life. And it's hilarious. I mean, nobody thinks they're going to be laughing in a classical music concert, really, you know. They might laugh with joy, but not at something truly comic.
And can you explain the relationship between you and the conductor and the orchestra? Because I understand...
Yeah, well, I mean, I think of Simon Rattle, I think of the conductor of the piece as kind of the prince that I'm trying to give the information to. I think of the orchestra as my squad. They are part of my KGB squad. They're my backup band. That's how I think of them. And there's even a point when there's this kind of really twisted hymn tune. The orchestra plays it, and I always think of that moment as like our theme song, our little secret police theme song that we sing at the end of every day or when we make a good catch or whatever, you know. And so they're my group, they're my peeps, you know. And then Simon is, you know, above us all, and yet everyone is destroyed by the end. There's no hierarchy at the end.
Is there improvisation in the middle?
There's a moment. I mean, I'm not improvising, really. I'm playing around. I'll always play it a little bit differently every time I do it, but that's just how I feel each time. But there is a moment when the conductor is supposed to say, in the score, it basically only says the conductor should turn around and say, what is going on? And Simon, you know, the first time we did that piece, I said, well, you don't actually have to say that. You can just freak out a little bit. Well, I shouldn't have told him that, because when I said freak out a little bit, he went to town with that. You know, he had a huge freak out, and it was so funny. The first time we did it in Berlin, I mean, everybody was just cracking up. So, I mean, Simon and I have done this piece quite a few times now, and every time he finds something special to do, and I think he looks forward to that as much as anything else, you know.
And you say that for you, the composer is the most important person. Is that one of the reasons you're particularly drawn to contemporary music, because you actually can work with the composer?
Well, you know, when I started singing professionally, I was 19 and I was working with living composers. It just turned out that way. And I suppose it was very important for me, like, I mean, to see what they go through. It's incredibly lonely. It's incredibly introverted, the process of writing. You don't meet that many extroverted composers. And to be the ally for them, to be their voice, literally, to champion them, to carry them, I feel an immense responsibility for that. But even when I sing other repertoire, I mean, when I sang my first Lulu this year by Alban Berg, I felt, maybe because I've talked to so many composers and I can almost guess what they're going to say, I felt like I was in a dialogue with Berg during the rehearsal process. And on opening night, it was the strangest feeling for me to not be able to gesture out into the audience for him to come on stage. It was just, I really felt that there was a seat for him in the hall, and I knew he was there, you know. And it's a funny feeling, but I think it's because I devote so much of my time to really trying to understand what they need, what they want. Because even if they're the best at notating, you still need to bring what is on the page to life. And there is something in between what is on the page and what the audience hears.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.